Chapter 22, The Great Depression Begins, 1929 to 1932. Why it matters. Prosperity in the United States seemed limitless before the Great Depression struck. Overproduction and agricultural problems contributed to the economic catastrophe. President Hoover looked to voluntary business action and limited government relief as solutions, but these efforts failed. Meanwhile, millions of Americans lost their jobs and life savings. Artists and writers depicted this suffering, and many people turned to lighthearted films to escape their difficult lives. The impact today. Events of this period remain important. Hoover's model of business-government cooperation is still influential. John Steinbeck's novel, The Grapes of Wrath, and Grant Wood's painting, American Gothic, are permanent artistic legacies. Section 1. Causes of the Depression. An American Story. In the years just after the 1929 stock market crash, Annetta Gibson taught English in a Rockford, Illinois grade school. As a teacher, Gibson was lucky because she was at least able to keep her job, unlike many other American workers. Everyone knew that the teachers' salaries were being held up. The stores charged anything we wanted, and we paid them when we got paid, so it wasn't too bad. The one thing that was bad was that we had worked hard at school to get the children to save. The children would bring, oh, maybe just a few pennies that they would put in their banks. Some of them had nice little bank accounts when the Depression hit, and some of them never got their money back. It wasn't too good a lesson, because they thought they might as well spend their money as save it and then have it gone. Quoted in The Centenarians, The Story of the 20th Century by the Americans Who Lived It. The Election of 1928. The economic collapse that began in 1929 had seemed unimaginable only a year earlier. In the election of 1928, the presidential candidates vied with each other to paint a rosy picture of the future. Republican Herbert Hoover declared, "We are nearer to the final triumph over poverty than ever before in the history of any land." The candidates. When Calvin Coolidge decided not to run for president in 1928, he cleared the way for Herbert Hoover to head the Republican ticket. A successful engineer and former head of the Food Administration during World War I, Hoover had spent 8 years as Secretary of Commerce in the Harding and Coolidge administrations. The Democrats chose Alfred E. Smith, four-time governor of New York. Smith was an Irish-American from New York's Lower East Side and the first Roman Catholic ever nominated to run for president. Campaign issues. By 1928, prohibition had become a major issue among voters. Because he favored the ban on liquor sales, Hoover was considered a dry in the popular language of the day. Smith, who disliked the ban, was a wet. The candidates' religious differences sparked a smear campaign against Smith. Many Protestants were willing to believe that the Catholic Church financed the Democratic Party and would rule the United States if Smith got into the White House. These slurs embarrassed Hoover, a Quaker, and he tried to quash them, but the charges seriously damaged Smith's candidacy. Smith's biggest problem, however, was the prosperity of the 1920s, for which the Republicans took full credit. Republican candidates promised to continue the trend with such slogans as "two cars in every garage." Hoover received over 6 million more votes than Smith, and won the Electoral College in a landslide, 444 to 87. On March 4, 1929, an audience of 50,000 stood in the rain to hear Hoover's inaugural speech. Sound movie cameras covered the inauguration for the first time, and radios broadcast the address worldwide. "I have no fears for the future of our country," Hoover said. "It is bright with hope." Reading check. Examining. What campaign issues led to Hubert Hoover's election to the presidency? The long bull market. The wave of optimism that swept Hoover into the White House also drove stock prices to new highs. The stock market was established as a system for buying and selling shares of companies. Sometimes circumstances in the stock market led to a long period of rising stock prices, which is known as a bull market. In the late 1920s, a prolonged bull market convinced many Americans to invest heavily in stocks. By 1929, between 3 and 4 million Americans, or roughly 10% of households, owned stocks. As the market continued to soar, many investors began buying stocks on margin, meaning they made only a small cash down payment, as low as 10% of the price. With $1,000, an investor could buy $10,000 worth of stock. The other $9,000 would come as a loan from a stockbroker, who earned both a commission on the sale and interest on the loan. The broker held the stock as collateral. As long as stock prices kept rising, buying on margin was safe. For example, an investor who borrowed money to buy $10,000 worth of stocks had to wait only a short time for them to rise to $11,000 in value. The investor could then sell the stock, repay the loan, and make $1,000 in profit. The problem came if the stock price began to fall. To protect the loan, a broker could issue a margin call, demanding the investor repay the loan at once. As a result, many investors were very sensitive to any fall in stock prices. If prices fell, they had to sell quickly, or they might not be able to repay their loans. Before the late 1920s, the prices investors paid for stocks had generally reflected the stock's true value. If a company made a profit or had good future sales prospects, its stock price rose, while a drop in earnings or an aging product line could send the price down. In the late 1920s, however, hordes of new investors bid prices up without regard to a company's earnings and profits. Buyers, hoping to make a fortune overnight, engaged in speculation. Instead of investing in the future of the companies whose shares they bought, speculators took risks, betting that the market would continue to climb, thus enabling them to sell the stock and make money quickly. Reading check. Summarizing. What was the stock market like in the 1920s? The Great Crash. The bull market lasted only as long as investors continued putting new money into it. By the latter half of 1929, the market was running out of new customers. In September, professional investors sensed danger and began to sell off their holdings. Prices slipped. Other investors sold shares to pay the interest on their brokerage loans. Prices fell further. Turning point. Crash. On Monday, October 21st, Groucho Marx, the comic star of stage and screen, was awakened by a telephone call from his broker. "You'd better get down here with some cash to cover your margin," the broker said. The stock market had plunged. The dazed comedian had to pay back the money he had borrowed to buy stocks, which were now selling for far less than he had paid. Other brokers made similar margin calls. Frightened customers put their stocks up for sale at a frenzied pace, driving the market into a tailspin. When Marx arrived at the brokerage, he found ticker tape knee-deep on the floor. He further recalled, "People were shouting orders to sell, and others were frantically scribbling checks in vain efforts to save their original investments." On October 24th, a day that came to be called Black Thursday, the market plummeted further. Marx was wiped out. He had earned a small fortune from plays and films, and now it was gone in the blink of an eye. Like many other investors, he was deeply in debt. Arthur Marx recalled his father's final visit to the brokerage as Groucho looked around and spotted his broker. He was sitting in front of the now stilled ticker tape machine, with his head buried in his hands. Ticker tape was strewn around him on the floor, and the place looked as if it hadn't been swept out in a week. Groucho tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Aren't you the fellow who said nothing could go wrong?" "I guess I made a mistake," the broker wearily replied. "No, I'm the one who made a mistake," snapped Groucho. "I listened to you." Quoted in The Year of the Great Crash. The following week, on October 29th, a day later dubbed Black Tuesday, prices took the steepest dive yet. That day, stocks lost $10 to $15 billion in value. By mid-November, the average price of stocks had fallen by half. The loss, some $30 billion, was roughly equal to the total wages earned by Americans that year. The stock market crash was not the major cause of the Great Depression, but it undermined the economy's ability to hold out against its other weaknesses. Banks in a tailspin. The market crash severely weakened the nation's banks in two ways. First, many banks had lent money to stock speculators. Second, many banks had invested depositors' money in the stock market, hoping for higher returns than they could get by using the money for conventional loans. When stock values collapsed, the banks lost money on their investments, and the speculators defaulted on their loans. Having suffered serious losses, many banks cut back drastically on the loans they made. With less credit available, consumers and businesses were unable to borrow as much money as they had previously. This helped to put the economy into a recession. For some banks, the losses they suffered in the crash were more than they could absorb, and they were forced to close. At the time, the government did not insure bank deposits. Therefore, if a bank collapsed, customers lost their savings. The bank failures in 1929 and early 1930 triggered a crisis of confidence in the banking system. News of bank failures worried many Americans. They began to make runs on the nation's banks, causing the banks to collapse. A bank run takes place when many depositors decide to withdraw their money at one time, usually for fear the bank is going to collapse. Most banks make a profit by lending money received from depositors and collecting interest on the loans. The bank holds on to only a fraction of the depositors' money to cover everyday business, such as occasional withdrawals. Ordinarily, that reserve is enough to meet the bank's needs, but if too many people withdraw their money, the bank will eventually collapse. During the first 2 years of the Depression, more than 3,000 banks, over 10% of the nation's total, were forced to close. Reading check. Evaluating. How did bank failures contribute to the Great Depression? The roots of the Great Depression. The stock market crash helped put the economy into a recession, yet the crash would not have led to a long-lasting depression if other forces had not been at work. The roots of the Great Depression were deeply entangled in the economy of the 1920s. The uneven distribution of income. Most economists agree that overproduction was a key cause of the depression. More efficient machinery increased the production capacity of both factories and farms. Most Americans did not earn enough to buy up the flood of goods they helped produce. While manufacturing output per person hour rose 32%, the average worker's wage increased only 8%. In 1929, the top 5% of all American households earned 30% of the nation's income. By contrast, about two-thirds of families earned less than $2,500 a year, leaving them little expendable income. During the 1920s, many Americans bought high-cost items, such as refrigerators and cars, on the installment plan, under which they would make a small down payment and pay the rest in monthly installments. Some buyers reached a point where paying off their debts forced them to reduce other purchases. This low consumption then led manufacturers to cut production and lay off employees. The slowdown in retail manufacturing had repercussions throughout the economy. When radio sales slumped, for example, makers cut back on their orders for copper wire, wood cabinets, and glass radio tubes. Montana copper miners, Minnesota lumberjacks, and Ohio glass workers, in turn, lost their jobs. Jobless workers had to cut back purchases, further reducing sales. This kind of chain reaction put more and more Americans out of work. The loss of export sales. Many jobs might have been saved if American manufacturers had sold more goods abroad. As the bull market of the 1920s accelerated, U.S. banks made high-interest loans to stock speculators instead of lending money to foreign companies. Without these loans from U.S. banks, foreign companies purchased fewer products from American manufacturers. Matters grew worse after June 1930, when Congress passed the Hawley-Smoot tariff, raising the average tariff rate to the highest level in American history. Rates went up on more than 900 manufactured items. the Hawley-Smoot tariff aimed to protect American manufacturers from foreign competition, but it damaged American sales abroad. Because imports now cost much more, Americans bought fewer of them. When foreign countries did not sell products in the United States, they had neither the money nor the inclination to buy American exports. By 1933, foreign trade fell to about one-third of what it had been in 1929, which hurt both American companies and farmers. Mistakes by the Federal Reserve. Just as consumers were able to buy more goods on credit, access to easy money propelled the stock market. Instead of raising interest rates to curb excessive speculation, the Federal Reserve Board kept its rates very low throughout the 1920s. The board's failure to raise interest rates significantly helped cause the depression in two ways. First, by keeping rates low, it encouraged member banks to make risky loans. Second, its low interest rates led business leaders to think the economy was still expanding. As a result, they borrowed more money to expand production, a serious mistake because it led to overproduction when sales were falling. When the Depression finally hit, companies had to lay off workers to cut costs. Then the Fed made another mistake. It raised interest rates, tightening credit. The economy continued to spiral downward. Reading check. Examining. How did the decline in worldwide trade contribute to the Depression?